Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
American Glutton Podcast has a Patreon. Do you hate commercials? Well, we've got a Patreon. Do you want bonus episodes? That's on the Patreon. Do you want to hang out and chat in our Discord channel? That's part of the Patreon too. We even have an option where you can leave me voicemails, all on the Patreon. So check it out today. Patreon.com/American Glutton. We have a Patreon.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. American Glutton is brought to you by Trifecta. The biggest factor in weight loss for me has been knowing ahead of time what I'm going to eat and having it ready when I need it. Trifecta meal deliveries have made this completely effortless for me and have been a total game changer in both diet and maintenance. Go to www.trifectanutrition.com/American Glutton to make your life and physical goals a whole lot easier. Today on American Glutton, my guest is Amanda Decadene. She is a photographer, author, and media personality, and she is an old friend of mine. She has for a long time hosted a show where she interviews women called The Conversation, and she is branching out to interview men, which I cannot wait for. Please enjoy. You can find her on Instagram at Amanda Decadene. Amanda Decadene, welcome to the American Glutton Podcast.
Ethan, this is such a treat. It really is. Just to be interviewed by you is just, wow, amazing.
I feel like it must be weird. You are an interviewer. Like, that's what you do. So is it going to be weird to get interviewed? No, yeah, you've been interviewed before.
Of course I have. But I'll tell you, like, you probably know this, when you interview somebody who's a friend.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing to do because you know stuff that you're asking them questions that you know the answer to.
Yeah, I know. Listen, I will say that not that this necessarily would come up with us, but there's certain times where I'm like, because it's my friend, I'm way less inquisitive simply because I'm not 100% sure everything that person's going to want to talk about. Do you know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly. Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you mean. And there's things that you just don't want to ask because you know that they don't really want to go there, but you would if someone who you didn't know.
Right. Because I would feel like if it was somebody I didn't know, it would be like, well, that's what we're talking about. That's
exactly. Exactly.
Meanwhile, you and I could talk about anything.
We can. What are we going to talk about? Because there's so much we could talk about.
Well, more than 2 years ago, we were going to do this and we got derailed by the entire world collapsing.
Yeah, we did.
Well, so let's talk about diet. And, you know, listen, I'm a dude.
I have a lot of female energy in my life because I have girls and a wife and granddaughters and girls coming out of my ears. However, I don't really talk to them about this stuff. Occasionally, I'll have a kid go like, how much protein should I eat a day? And I'm like, such an odd question from you, but okay, let's talk about it, you know? And then I'll find out that one of my kids is really trying to deadlift with the guys. And I'm like, okay, yeah, eat a bunch of protein.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
But I think the female perspective on diet, and I try to have as many female guests as possible, is completely different from the male perspective.
It is. It is. There's just so much of a different lens on the female body. And not to say that I don't have guy friends who also really struggle with their self-image, but certainly as a public person, and you know this better than most, you know, there is so much focus on the external. And, you know, for me, I started working at age 15. I was hosting live late night television in the UK when I was 15 years old. And so there was a lot of focus on the way I looked. And it took me years to appreciate, to kind of care about my body from the inside out as opposed to the outside in.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of kind of education that needed to happen. And it came through because so much of the time it was like, well, what looks good? You know, I need to make sure that I look a certain way. And that, you know, over many years was quite destructive, you know, learning what works for my body so that I can be strong and healthy and look the way I want to look has been a real process.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I had my first daughter at 19 and I put on a lot of weight from being pregnant with that first child. And there was a lot of public criticism of my body. And it was things like, you know, she used to be so hot and now she's not. And, you know, it really was very damaging for me. And it took me many years to kind of develop a loving relationship with my body, because certainly at that time it was the cause of a lot of, you know, I was made fun of a lot because of how my body looked post-pregnancy, and I was mad at my body. I was like, why, you know, why won't you go back to normal like it was before? And I realized there is no normal. There is a new normal. And then when I had my twins at age 35, my body did the same thing again. So I had a twin pregnancy. So it was almost more extreme. And then I was like, okay, I've been here before. I know that I can have a body that's healthy, but also looks the way that I want it to look. And, you know, it has been an ongoing process. I got pre-diabetes during pregnancy that never left. And so I've been managing that. And that, you know, for me has meant that I could look at a carbohydrate and put on weight.
Right.
And man, do I love to eat cookies and cake. Yeah, I love to eat cake. But you know what? I now eat cookies and cake that's made with almond flour and monk fruit sweetener.
Right.
And you know what? They're pretty damn good. Like, and this has been a journey. Like, this is kind of like the journey I don't talk about, that is kind of right behind insignificance. It's right behind recovery and getting sober at 21, that is a journey, right? I've been sober most of my adult life, and that is an ongoing process. That's the most important thing. And then right behind that is my relationship with my body and, you know, my health and my, you know, my being matching my insides with my outsides. And that has been an ongoing journey too. And I'm still in process with it, you know?
How important do you think it is, this what you said, loving myself from the inside out? Because I find that's still like a very big work in progress for me. But I find when I go into something and I'm very down and negative on myself, I don't usually succeed. Versus when I'm lifting myself up and talking and treating myself well and kind to myself, I have a little bit more power over whatever I'm doing. That process is so fascinating to me. And it's not, I don't think it's really, you know, I like philosophy and I like to look at things like emotions and go like, that's not really real. We're reacting somehow to something objective, and the objective thing, it takes no moral position in space and time. And I'm in charge of how I feel about it. And then I also feel a certain way, and that can cause me to react in certain ways. And sometimes I regret them and sometimes I don't. But like this idea of treating myself kindly and loving myself, not because of or how I've succeeded at a diet or not, but simply for who I am, I find that so important. And I want to know, what's your experience been like with that?
It's really difficult. I mean, it's really difficult. We all know that affirmative thinking is good for us in every way. It's good for us spiritually. It's good for us psychologically. It's good for us physically. And yet it's really hard to do when you have, you know, emotions are strong. Reactive patterns and imprints are strong. And it is really hard to not let those take over. It is one of the ongoing challenges and things that I have to work on is mindset. And I am always so curious when I meet people who are able to kind of, I don't want to say control their mindset, because I don't want to get in a fight with controlling my mindset. I don't even want to look at it that way. But, you know, they have mastered the art of positive thinking. That to me is fascinating, because I'm such an emotional being and my emotions can run me and really take over. And that is one of the things. I mean, I work on it every day. And boy, is it tiring. I literally said to someone this week, do you think there'll ever be a time where I don't have to spend 85% of my day trying to self-regulate what I'm feeling?
Right. Do you find, though, that with time and practice that it gets easier, like it becomes like, I know what you're saying. Some huge portion of my time is spent in a similar way, but I do think the effort behind it has lessened up, because now not innate, but it's becoming more a part of my routine.
Yes, you've integrated it. I've integrated it. It's part of who I am. You know, it's like, what kind of person do you want to be? You know, who do you want to be? What kind of parent do you want to be? What kind of partner do you want to be? You know, looking at all the areas of your life and going, it's definitely better for me and for everyone else when I do this. Yeah. And therefore, the same way that sobriety is built into and recovery is built into every day, it's just part of the fabric of who I am. And self-regulating and mindset is part of every day. I start my day off with, you know, between 15 and 30 minutes, sometimes an hour if I can get it, of, you know, the things that I do to put me into a mindset that is positive, you know. And that for me is, you know, I have a couple of books that I read, I do a meditation, I do some kind of movement of my body, whether that's walking or yoga or swimming. I read something that is inspiring, and then I get on with my day, and it just kind of shifts my brain into a sort of energetic space that I hope I will stay in as long as possible throughout the day.
Yeah. And then I think that, that kind of practice allows us then to seek out and find the tools, because I think of every kind of diet or regimen as a tool. Any of these things are just a tool. I don't think any of them are the be all end all to like, my life is solved because I did this diet, but they're oftentimes sold to us that way, and sold to us as though like, this X works for everyone and everyone should just do this.
Well, this will fix you. This right. will fix you. This is the answer.
Yeah.
And it is never one thing that is the answer. And what might be the answer for you is not the answer for me necessarily, you know, and all of our bodies are different. You know, we're all different. We, our perspectives, our bodies are, you know, we have similarities because we're human beings, right? There's a kind of certain amount of similarities, but then there's also the nuance of individuality. And it's about, for me, it's been about really educating myself. Like at one point I did the ketogenic diet and I put on weight. I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. You know, and my nutritionist was like, well, that's just not possible. And I was like, it's possible because it's happening. I never went into ketosis. I just put on weight.
Yeah.
And now some people would say that's just not possible, but it was, and that was the facts. And I tried that. That did not work for me, you know?
I've put on weight. Listen, if you are consuming more energy than you're using, your body's going to store it as fat. So one way or another, it's certainly possible. If you did it, I've also put on weight doing keto. It's certainly possible.
Well, and yet I had to try things. And also, how do I feel while I'm doing something? You know what I mean? Each one of these things, like you said, they're tools, and they are not to be, you can't, if you look at it literally like a tool, you're not always going to just use a hand drill. You know, you're going to need a hammer. You're going to need a saw. You're going to need different things at different times. And that's how I look at learning about myself, you know, and understanding that my body is connected to my spirit, is connected to, you know, all of it. Body, mind, spirit is connected. I cannot be learning and paying attention to one and not the other. Because I have pre-diabetes, how that manifests in me is, if I eat sugar, I go to sleep. It's like my family jokes that some people shouldn't be, you know, smoking weed and driving or drinking and driving. I should not be eating a cookie and driving. I'm like a drunk person, you know, it's like, or a stone person. I'm like falling asleep and I can't process. I'm very slow to process. And I mean, that's real for me. It's like if I can't sleep, I will eat a cookie as opposed to, you know, take something that make me go to sleep, because it does the same thing. So I had to learn that about my body, that if I'm going to eat anything that has any kind of raising my insulin, it must be at night before I go to bed. I can't do it in the day. You know, basic stuff like that, that takes you a while to work, kind of learn yourself, you know, and go, oh, how does this affect me? Oh, when I eat like this, I feel like this, you know? And so for me, it's been years of kind of learning myself. And also something that worked in my 20s or 30s or 40, you know, might not work in my 40s.
Right.
It might not, you know, as women's bodies evolve and change over time, and your hormones change and your, you know, your consciousness changes and you learn more, and it's like you have to then adapt to what those needs are. And for example, right now, I am feeling very strongly about, I can't eat animals.
Okay.
I went from eating like lamb chops, because I really like them, and filet mignon, and I just can't eat animals, because during COVID, I spent so much time with my animals, and I started to feel like, what's the difference between my dog and that cow? You know, if I think my dog is, I'm connected to my dog and I have this profound, intimate relationship with my dog, which I do, why would I not have it? Why can I not have that with a cow or a sheep or a goat? And it's just, I just have to listen to my body, because right now it's just saying, don't eat them.
Right.
Now, I don't know what I'm going to do for protein, because I need protein. My body needs it. My brain needs it. But I'm having a conflict because my spirit is saying, don't eat the animals.
Listen, I understand the moral issue with animals, but do you draw the line at stuff like whey? Like, is whey fair game for you? Or you want to be ultra vegan?
I don't want to participate in anything that is harmful to animals right now. And I also have chickens. And the thing is like, I know each one of those chickens, they've each got characters. It started with the chickens, Ethan, where I was like, I can't eat the chickens because I've got chickens.
But listen, you ostensibly got them to eat them, or to eat their eggs.
To eat their eggs, right? Yes. And then I became friends with them because I was taking care of them And then I was like, oh, no, I have a, and they're all so different. Their characters are so different. Like one's a total bitch. One is super friendly, you know? And I was like, now I have a relationship with the chickens. I can't eat the friends, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a moral dilemma because I know my body needs high protein. It just does. That's the kind of body I have. That's the kind of brain I have. And so
you can certainly get a lot of protein from plants, and there are even protein supplements like pea protein powder where you can get.
Well, that's high lectin though.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like the amino acid breakdown is not maybe not as bioavailable as animal protein. So it's a quandary you're in.
It's a quandary, and I didn't choose it. It just came upon me where I started noticing that I was leaving the animal protein on the side of my plate at my meals. And I was like, oh God, what is going on here? Maybe I need to disguise it more, you know?
Yeah.
And so, but I feel like I am pretty educated about food and also how I eat it, right? Like, was it humanely killed, or does it come from a factory farm? Yeah. You know, there's something like that makes a difference too. So there's a lot of considerations when eating, a lot.
Sure. I've had this idea many times. Usually it's with my kids telling me something's gross and we're traveling or something like that. And I'm like, this is no more gross than anything you're totally used to eating. You know, I had to explain to a kid recently, and this kid is 15 now, by the way, so not really like a little kid, the kind of stuff that went into a chicken nugget. You know, she assumed that it was just a chicken breast that was battered and then deep fried. And, you know, I'd say like, no, this is probably cartilage and beaks and feet and all that stuff is what's going into a chicken nugget, I would assume, and made into some slurry and then shaped and battered and fried. To me, it's not gross. To me, it doesn't bum me out. Like, you know, this could
be. It bums me out.
I understand. No, I understand. I'm saying like.
It's like what goes into a sausage.
Right. Yeah. You could go to the sausage factory. It's going to make me hungry. You would never eat a sausage again.
No, I would never eat a sausage again. And when you think about it, it's like the balls and the hooves and the, you're just like the bits that nobody wants.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, but again, educating them is like, then they can have a choice. Right. Right. You know, like my son is, you know, he's, you know, my twins are 15 and my daughter is a plant-based kid from her own, you know, from choosing that. And my son is a fucking carnivore, man.
Yeah.
You know, he is like, I'm like, dude, when's the last time you saw a vegetable?
Not,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No, he's like, I mean, he'll have like a wedge salad with blue cheese dressing and like ribs, you know, but he's like super carnivore. And, you know, I have to let them be what they want, what they have to eat, what they want to eat.
Yeah. I took my youngest, it's very hard to find. You can't find like an abattoir or anything like that in Los Angeles where you're actually seeing the whole animal get broken down. But there was, and I doubt that it still exists because it's such a small community in Los Angeles that hunts. But in La Crescenta, there was a butcher that processed game meat. So if you shot a deer, you take it to this butcher and they break it down for you. So I took the kids in to see, look, there's Bambi. And I just want you to know that this is where meat comes from. Like, I want you to understand that it was a living thing that was cute and cuddly and furry. And I think Grace was vegetarian for like 5 minutes after that, although she didn't equate that to bacon. So when bacon came around and she was I want bacon. And
bacon's the exception to the rule.
Right. And that kind of derailed her veganism.
Why is that? That still happens to me. I smelled bacon the other day. I was like, yep, those, I don't care. Those little cute pigs, that bacon smells good.
Babe is delicious.
Babe is delicious.
So so how are you navigating this? How are you getting protein?
I mean, I'm having tofu. I am having pea protein. I am having some whey protein. I am eating some like feta cheese, some cheese, but it's, you know, it's really difficult. I'm not eating enough protein is the truth. Some fish, shrimp, I haven't. And then the other day I heard someone talking about how there's this new study that like lobsters have feelings. I was like, I'm turning that radio off now.
Yeah.
Like I cannot be hearing that the fish now have feelings. That's a Nirvana song actually about fish having feelings.
Amanda, have you ever heard a lobster be boiled alive? Like they boil them alive.
Yes, it's horrendous.
Scream. Yeah.
It's, no, but it's that's the really air awful. Coming out of their claws, Ethan.
Is it?
I'm choosing to believe that.
Okay. I think that's little lobster screaming, we have feelings and this hurts.
That's what I am afraid that you're right. And they started to talk about this on the show, that show. And that's when I turned it off.
Yeah.
I was like, I cannot. So I have, that's kind of like one of my lost sources of protein is shrimp and fish. But then you have to have low mercury fish. And
oh, I just had an idea. There's a great argument for mollusks being vegan friendly. And the idea is they're more like a fruit than they are an animal. They actually don't have nervous systems. So scallops and mussels and clams and oysters and things like that, they do not behave at all in the same way that animals do.
Okay, that's reassuring.
Yeah.
It is reassuring because I thought, oh my God, don't let me start a relationship with a lobster or shrimp at this point.
Right.
Like,
fuck you up.
Just no, I cannot. So, you know, look, I'm listening to my body and it's telling me this is what you need to do right now. And, you know, I will say my carb intake has increased. Hummus, a lot of hummus.
There's good
a
protein
lot of
in
hummus.
Beans. Yeah.
Yes. So hummus and then... you know, yeah, I mean, I don't want to eat too many beans.
Yeah.
And the lectin. So my husband, you know, Nick, he did, the Gundry diet a long time ago because he had severe eczema and it completely got rid of it. And so he does not touch lectins.
Right.
And so I'm very aware of where the lectins live in foods. And so I also try to, you know,
peel
be
your
mindful.
Cucumbers and get rid of the seeds. Yeah. For me, I'm a fan of that because I have a friend who had eczema also that cleared up when he excised lectins from his diet. I just go like selling that diet, the Gundry method or whatever the hell it's called, as a weight loss thing. To me, it doesn't make any sense because he doesn't really get into portions. And if he does, it really does come down to like a one size fits all. Like everybody just eat this.
Right. And, you know, I did do macros for a while and that was really interesting for me. That was super interesting. It gave me a kind of hypervigilance on food that ended up being not healthy for me.
Right.
Right. Because I was so preoccupied with how much and all the different macros that were involved in everything. And it made me, it was helpful for a while and it really did work with weight loss.
Yeah.
But the mental piece of it was not, the psychological piece of it was not great because I was hyper-focused on it. And
small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Growing up as a kid, my mom would never let us have real cereal. When I say real cereal, I mean the stuff that you'd find at a normal grocery store. My mom would get us the cardboard shavings at the health food store, and I was always miserable with my cereal. And then I would magically go to my friend's house, and they would have real cereal. And I would be so envious, and I would sit and eat bowl after bowl of delicious, frosted goodness, sugary, wonderful stuff. And then I grew up and I was able to buy my own cereal, but that lasted all of 2 minutes because then I started dieting, so cereal left my life entirely. Well, not anymore. Not anymore. Now there's Magic Spoon, which is high-protein cereal. My favorite flavor is their peanut butter. It's incredible. Variety pack. Four flavors are cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Only 140 calories a serving. It's high protein, has 0 grams of sugar, keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, and soy free. It's incredible. Go to magicspoon.com/glutton and grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code GLUTTON at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember, start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/glutton and use the code GLUTTON to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
Now I'm in a place where I know enough about nutrients, macros, what my body needs, calories, portions, types of calories, that I know how to eat in a way that works for my body. It's like a language that I really can speak now.
Yeah.
And I choose to, you know, speak that language, or if I choose to go off that, I know what's going to happen.
Right. And how are you with the externals? Like the internal matters more. That's the upper echelon of your goal.
Yeah.
How are you with the externals? Are you happy? Are you struggling?
Well, I'll tell you, this is the thing about me, is I hate exercise.
Right.
I hate it. I was a trained gymnast up until age 11. And so I had to train, you know, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And on Saturdays, it was 5 hours a day. And so that gave my body a muscle memory, and it gave it a structure and a muscle tone that has been with me my whole life. But I hate exercising, and I don't think I have endorphins, by the way. I don't think I do. No, you're laughing. I don't think I do.
Even when you were doing gymnastics as a kid, you never felt good?
No, I never felt good. I always felt exhausted.
Wow.
And I feel exhausted when I work out. I just feel like, oh my God, it's like, I never feel good. And I really don't like it. I just don't like it. I don't want to do it. I don't like it. And so I'm looking at my body and I'm going, wow, your body has maintained so much without you doing very much aesthetically. Aesthetically, it's in a point where I'm like, oh, gravity has now come along, because I'm at a certain age where it's like, you know, my stomach or my butt or my arms doesn't have the same tone. And, you know, it's up to me if I want to do something about it. I've been able to kind of skate by my whole life with still looking pretty good without doing much exercise, but that has changed. Right. And so now it's up to me. Now I have to put the work in if I want to maintain what I've got.
Yeah.
And during COVID, I was so sedentary that when I kind of came up for air, I was like, oh, a bunch has changed. Like 2 years of my life went by and I didn't really move. And so it has been, you know, the last year and a half has been about getting my pre-diabetes numbers down. What that means is that, you know, the more weight I get off, the less my numbers are. There's a correlation. So I've had to work really hard with my diet. You know, I would say diet is kind of probably 80% of what I had to do. And then make a conscious choice. If I want my body to look stronger and more toned, I'm going to have to do that exercise. And so what is that going to look like?
Yeah. Yeah. I it's tricky because from my standpoint, and I have a kid, one of my kids who I'll drag to the gym with me, and she'll come and then she's always tired at the end. And I'm at the end, I'm like, don't you feel great? And she's like, no, I don't feel good. I don't like doing this. And I'm like, okay, well, you don't.
I am her. I am her.
I don't know what to do for her because my experience has always been, I feel better. That's the thing that keeps me going back to the gym. So like hearing that, I don't know how to solve that. But like, I would say even, you know, walking is exercise. And if you can find somewhere beautiful to walk, that could be enjoyable.
I mean, look, Ethan, sometimes I'd see you at the gym and I'd be like, maybe I'll go walk out with Ethan. You know, maybe that would be fun if I could like do it with you and like, you're so good at it and I'm so bad at it. And so it would be funny and like, we would have a good time and we would laugh, you know, and that's probably true.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm strong. Like I'm crazy strong. Like I can lift things that grown men are like, whoa. You know, like I ride motorbikes my whole life and big motorbikes. Like I'm strong, you know, physically, like I can lift things. I can move things. I'm good with strength. I'm not good with cardio.
Right.
I don't want to do cardio, but I'm strong. So I can lift like serious weight for someone who hates exercise. So sometimes I have a fantasy of like, maybe I'll go work out with Ethan, you know,
and anytime. Then I think,
thank you. I know if I send you a text and say, Ethan, I want to come work out with you, you'd be like, let's do it. You know, so for me, it's like, and I get bored. I get bored as well. It's like, oh, I got to do like 20 of these and then take a break for 30 seconds and 20 of those. It's like, it's so boring to me, you know?
Yeah.
So I've tried to think about what can I do that keeps my attention. And that's like, I have a friend that's rock climbing right now and she's getting ripped. But she loves rock climbing.
Yeah.
Like her arms and like even just like her weight, everything's going the way she needs it to. But she's found it through doing something that she loves. And maybe I just haven't found that. So I'm kind of, I don't like group activity. And when everyone goes to the left, I've tried to do like workout classes or dance classes. I don't know what it is. It's some neurological thing, but everyone goes to the left, I go to the right.
Right.
I don't know. They say, put your left hand, you know, do this. I'm the opposite.
You're like slapping people in the face.
I am. I'm just, it's terrible. It's terrible. So that doesn't work for me. I'm trying to, and by the way, I want to do things that I don't want to say feel good, but like I enjoy doing.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't believe people will stick to something they don't enjoy or it will just become so painful that it's like, you're going to go and waste a huge portion of your life doing something that you really don't enjoy. I think it's a waste of time. Yeah,
it is. And it's not, it's addressing one aspect of you. And, you know, I started off saying this and I think about this, that if something isn't in support of all aspects of you, the mind, body, spirit, you're going to create an imbalance in your life. And so physically, is it doing what I need it to do? Is it elevating my heart? Is it, you know, creating, is it strengthening my bones? You know, is it doing what I need to do physically? If the answer is yes, great. What is it doing for my spirit? You know, is it stressing me out and taxing me so much? And I dread it every single time that it's putting me, that's raising my cortisol levels. So that is not working.
Yeah.
You know, like I always try to look for at this stage of the game, things that holistically fit.
Yeah. I think that's smart. That's what you have to do.
It is. For any kind of sustainability.
Yeah.
Like what you're saying.
Yeah. I have a question and I want to pose it simply because it hasn't permeated my experience. And I sometimes wonder why, and I don't know why, but like when I was a kid and a huge, a huge portion of my career was built on being overweight. Like that was why
sure, that
was
part
hired.
Of your identity. Yeah.
100%. And there were a lot of jokes in certain things that were directed at the character I was playing for that reason. And that was all fine. It was kind of totally acceptable to make fun of a fat person. But like when you were 19, had your first kid, gained weight, and were kind of ridiculed in the press for it, I don't believe that could happen. I don't believe that would happen today. Might happen a little bit. Certainly people on the internet are assholes and maybe, but I don't know that big press outlets would be doing that. And I think that as
the British tabloid media,
are they rough? But
they still talk about women's bodies. I mean, publications like the Daily Mail, they can't mention a woman's name without describing her body.
Right.
Slender legs.
No,
whatever.
Yeah, no, 100%. Women are still highly scrutinized publicly for their bodies. But there has been a big urge towards more acceptance of larger bodies.
Yes.
For me, I look around and I go like, I see the society trying on this front. I don't feel it personally at all. And I'm not saying that it's because of the outside. The outside is changing. I've experienced nothing. I'm still just as hard on myself as I was, you know, when I was 500 pounds. Maybe that's not true, but I still have those thoughts arise and I go, well, I don't think the people at the beach are having this thought about me. Why am I having this thought about me?
Mm.
Have you noticed any shift for yourself? Like, society is changing. And do you feel a change?
Yes, I do. I do feel, you know, I'm a photographer. I photograph a lot of models. I've been photographed my entire adult life. And so I'm very aware of the cultural beauty norms that has expanded. There are models who I know that I've worked with that I know personally who would be considered, you know, fat girls. They just would. They were called fat their whole lives.
Right. Like when we were teenagers, they had no shot at modeling.
Oh, no, definitely not. And I look at two of them I'm thinking of in particular, Paloma Elsesser and Ashley Graham, both of whom are exquisitely beautiful, whose bodies would never have been accepted in mainstream culture. And I love to see when Paloma was put on the cover of American Vogue, it was such a statement. It was such a statement for expanding the cultural beauty norm. And given that the average size of the average American woman is size 16, that's the average. Which is what, I mean, I don't want Paloma sizing is now necessarily, but you know,
I don't know what sizes
we need to be representing. We need to represent the world.
Right.
So there is more acceptance, I think. And by the way, we're talking about normal bodies. We're not talking about an idealized standard of women's bodies. That is a very small percentage of women. You know, my husband will say to me, like, is that body real or not? And I'm like, well, you can see her waist is tiny. Her ass is much larger and her boobs are much larger. Like it's a rarity that women are born with that kind of a shape. Now, maybe to some degree, because I had that shape, you know, that was my shape I had for years, like super curvy. But I know what it takes to buy that kind of shape, because I see women all over the place and they have small, tiny bones, tiny little waist, and then they've got giant boobs and giant bums. And it's like, well, that is bought. That's a bought bum and boobs right there. And I don't have a judgment of it. I'm just saying that the cultural norm has expanded to much curvier women, to the point where now you've got women who used to be in the ideal beauty standard, which is very slim, now buying boobs and bums so that they fit into the cultural norm. So yes, it has changed quite a lot, I think.
Right. I mean, that's all. I had never even considered that. But like, as we were talking, I was like, When did this happen? Because Marilyn Monroe was not slight, right? She was a curvy girl.
Super curvy. And but it goes through phases. When you look at like fashion, like the 50s woman looked a certain way, 60s, 70s woman. I love the 70s woman. I mean, like you look at 70s Playboys, beautiful, full boobs, curvy, big bushes. You know, you start to get into the 2000s, there's no bushes. you know, it's like the bodies have changed. You know, the 90s were super thin, wave looking girls, you know, with like super flat chested almost and like straight down without the shape. You know, it's like fashion and body norms have changed and evolved over time. And whilst I think that we're in a time that is much more expansive and inclusive of beauty, there is, of course, still now the cultural norm that giant boobs and giant butts are considered desirable. So you have a lot of people who are now buying those.
Right.
There's always an up and a downside of all of it, right?
Yeah. I just go out into the world and go,
imagine
like,
being a woman, Ethan. It's very confusing.
I cannot imagine being a woman. No. It's I'm very, very happy to not have been a woman. I love women. And I just want to go like, I wish I could truly empathize, but I can't. And whatever I can do for you, that's what I'll do. You know what I mean? Like, I just mostly am hands off.
Well, you're smart. That's because you're married a long time and you got a lot of daughters. So you are smart. I love you, whatever I can do for you, but I'm hands off.
Right. Okay. You have for a long time been very, very a part of women's voices, interviewing women, propping women up, and you are moving into the arena of men. What brought that on?
Well, I, as you said, I have with my interview series, The Conversation, I have interviewed women for the last, 15 years, and I've photographed women for the majority of my career. And I've always been telling stories about women. Why I shifted to interviewing men is, I have a 15-year-old son. I'm married to my husband for 20 years. I have one of my best friends is a guy. I have a lot of, I love men as you love women. I love men. And I also have been looking at the culture that my son is growing up in. And I'm very aware that men have had a massive cultural awakening over the last few years. And I've been having fascinating conversations with men about masculinity and what does it mean to be a guy today? And there's a lot of unanswered questions. And there's also, I think, a need for genders to be able to communicate about subject matters that we just haven't been brave enough to speak about. Genders need to have their own spaces because uniquely, as you said, uniquely, you as a man can understand the experience as a woman and vice versa. I can empathize with you, but I really don't know because I'm a woman and I'm a cis white woman and that's my experience in the world. So I can empathize all I want, but the most I can do is to invite and create a space where multiple genders can communicate about subject matter and issues that I think we need to discuss together. And I'm really curious about how do we redefine masculinity? Because masculinity is being redefined. It has been redefined by sheer nature of what has happened with the women's movement over the last just 5 years. And so we don't have definitive shape of what does it mean to be a man today. A lot of male friends that I have are like, I don't even know anymore. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of confusion. And I'm speaking to men, everybody from, Matthew McConaughey about how he was taught about consent, what he says, how he teaches his kids about consent, to Charlemagne the God about mental health. And, as a Black man in America, what does it mean? What does masculinity mean? I'm interviewing Mike Tyson next week. I'm interviewing really interesting men who have a perspective about what it means to be a guy and masculinity. How do I help invite a conversation around masculinity? Because I think that in order to really move forward, we need to have a space where men can be a part of this conversation.
I'm so excited to see some of these because I think a lot of the I think there's a lot of hesitancy, and I know that won't be the case with you because I know you very well, and I think you're very open and you're not judgmental, but I think you'll have men who won't communicate because they are scared, you know, because yes. like saying, you know, some idea they have, which is amenable to other things. It's not fixed and rigid, but it's an idea can get them in trouble in the world now. You know what I mean? And it's like, how do we evolve our ideas if we can't share them? You know, if we can't talk about them.
We actually cannot learn. We cannot learn if we don't make mistakes. Making mistakes is an inherent part of learning, of growth. By making mistakes, you go, oh, damn, that did not end well.
Yeah.
Or that did not feel good. I am not doing that again. Like, we have to be able to fuck up. We have to be able to make mistakes. And yet we cannot do it in a public forum anymore because that could be the end of your career.
Right.
Or your marriage or whatever it is. And that speaks to the larger issue of cancel culture, which affects all genders. However, there is a specific culture that is ruthless with men. And I do not want to be a part of that culture. I want to be a part of a culture that is solution-based and that is reaching across the aisle and trying to build bridges. And that's why I'm doing this series.
I think it's a very important undertaking that you're embarking upon because, you know, listen, some people do things where I go like, I don't know, maybe that person needs to be excused from society for a minute. I don't know.
Totally.
But then there are many instances where I go like, I don't know, maybe that person could really learn from this and grow and should be welcomed back. And they're not a lot of the time, or if they are, it's like on very different terms. And I think that by forcing those other terms, like people are just going to go exist over here and they're going to do just fine. Like their career's changed dramatically, but not ended. That's just going to reinforce whatever there's going to be no learning or growth in that way. It's going to be, well, I have to be right. I'm going to go into my corner and I'm going to just be right for the rest of my life. You know what I mean?
The only way that we can see if people have really learned is by having them back in culture and in society. There are some people where it's like, you're never coming back. Like, we can just send you to the island, wherever that is, and like, you're done, right?
Or
there are those people.
Or fake your suicide in a jail in New York.
Whatever you want to do, right? Whatever works for you. But like, we're never having you back in mainstream society. And then there's the other people where it's like, actually, this is pretty nuanced. And let's unpack this and let's look at this. And I have one friend who has been accused of assault by multiple women. And you know, over the years, I've had an ongoing dialogue with him about, well, how is it that all these women have this experience and you have a different experience? And I've been really grateful to be able to unpack this with him in such detail to really understand why he had that perspective he had and why they had the perspective they had. And what's been amazing for me is to see his ownership of what he did do and see his growth and see how his mindset is so different today because of what he learned.
Yeah.
And that to me has been really encouraging. You know, there is something called restorative justice, which, you know, is incredible if it's possible. It's not always possible for many reasons. Sometimes the offense is so heinous that it would be re-traumatizing to the person to even have to sit close to that person again. But there are some cases. Ashley Judd talked about restorative justice, where she sat with the man who sexually assaulted her, who raped her. I mean, you know, what profound healing is possible if we could put some kind of structure and tools in place to help people to heal. Taking ownership of the things we've done in our past is step number one, like true ownership. Internally, we don't need to tell anybody else that we've taken ownership, but for us, that is the first thing that needs to happen. There's nothing without that, you know? But there's also, what I'm finding so interesting in talking to men is, you know, some of them, the same way that that different bodies were in fashion at different times. Different behavior was in fashion at different times. And a lot of the people I've spoken to were like, that's just how we did it. You know, you didn't have to ask somebody, may I kiss you?
Right.
You just leant in and tried to kiss them. And if they wanted to, they did. And if they didn't, they didn't. But now that's non-consensual kissing. And that could be a problem. So, okay, well, in theory, that's true. In theory, what you're saying, when you say it like that, like it's true, could be a problem. However, the game plan has now changed. And so for my son's generation, he has to be aware, and my daughter has to be aware too. There's a whole different dialogue. This is the way things are now. It did not used to be like that.
Yeah.
It is now.
Yeah. In that sense, I am so glad to have girls because I was never good with getting a girl to kiss me. This was like not my strong point at all. So I don't have anything really in that regard to teach a young man. But I can teach my daughters emphatic no, you know, and vital targets on a man to attack if they need to. Like, and this is what I'm going like, I'll all day long, we're going to learn eye gouges and groin stomps and you know what I mean? And like,
Ethan,
I enjoy
you should teach
them.
A class on this.
Yeah.
You should. You're such a girl dad. I mean, and it's terrible that we need to teach our kids this. It's terrible that when I put my daughter, you know, if I consider sending my daughter in an Uber, I'm like, you must wear pants. And, you know, she's like, oh, that's going to make a difference. I was like, hey, just stop 50% of people looking at you if you're there's no less skin.
Right.
She's like, why should I have to adjust the way I dress so that because men can't control themselves? Because until they can, you got to go with what is.
Yeah. But also, there's been no point in history where there haven't been scumbags. No point. No matter exactly what society said was okay, there's it, no matter what culturally is acceptable and unacceptable, there are going to be some real dirtbags out there. So my point to my daughters is just like, I don't care if a person's supposed to ask you today whether they're allowed to kiss you or not. Fine. If that's the rule, fine. I hope to never be in a situation in for the rest of my life where I have to like go through even thinking about that. Right. I'm married. I'm that's done.
Sure.
My wife doesn't want to kiss me. She pushes my face away and we're fine. But right.
That's your love language.
Yeah, exactly. For my girls, like, I don't care if guys are supposed to ask you now. There's going to be a guy who possibly, hopefully not, but there could be a guy. I know a guy exists who isn't going to ask, who isn't going to ask about anything. And fuck that guy. Kick him in the balls, gouge his eyes out, fish hook his cheek, scream no, scream fire. You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
That's kind of my position.
Ethan, I'm going to tell you that when my kids were little, I used to do fire drills with them about what to do if somebody touched them inappropriately. Both my kids, my boy and my girl. I was like, this is what you do. And I would actually have them say it out loud, you know, no, don't touch me. And like, I would have them verbalize it so that they were used to saying those words. It wasn't alien language for them. Yeah. And then you run away and you tell an adult. You know, like we had a whole, like Nick, my husband was like, I think you're just putting the fear of God in them. And I was like, I mean, I had to really check myself on that one. You know, like, am I putting fear into them or am I preparing them? Should anything, God forbid, happen?
You know, there's the other side to this too, where I read a headline and I didn't read the article. I should have, and it's very lazy of me, but I read a New York Post, and granted it's the New York Post, so they're sensationalizing anything they write. But it said that a law was passed in New York that in nightclubs, it's now illegal to stare at a person without permission.
Oh, I saw
permission.
That. I saw that headline too. That
and
was
I'm
that.
Just
I
like, come on, guys. This is
Dude,
ridiculous.
It's too much.
Yeah,
it's
a
too
bridge
much.
Too far.
Guess what? Some people will sue.
Right.
And here's the sad part. You know, the Me Too movement is one of the most profound and needed movements of the last decade. Not decade, century.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It really is. And there are people who will abuse every single movement for their own personal gain. Yeah. As you said, there will always be scumbags. There will always be people who use incredible, culturally significant movements for their own needs.
Yeah,
that happens. And we have to learn and be discerning between who those people are and who are the people who are really using something as it should be used.
Yeah. Yeah. This law in New York, I mean,
that law of looking at someone in a nightclub. I mean, what the fuck are you doing in a nightclub?
Right. Aren't you there to see people?
I mean, I am sorry, but, you know, I mean, look, you're a married person. I'm a married person. If my husband's in a nightclub at 2 a.m., my question is, what are you doing?
Right.
Like, sorry, single people are not really going to nightclubs unless they're looking to get laid, or I mean, married people, you're there to look at people and get drunk or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It made me really chuckle because I guess I need to tell my kids, like, eye gouging and groin stomps for a person looking at you might be an overreaction.
You know? Must remember to tell them that, Ethan.
Yeah. Hopefully there won't be any nightclubs in New York anytime soon. But yeah.
I mean, we hope not. But I don't know. If they were like us, maybe they would.
Right. Yeah. They probably already have been if they were like
right.
us. Right. Amanda, thank you so much.
Ethan, I'm so happy to talk to you.
You too. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
And now for the Q&A.
Here is a question from Austin.
Hi, Austin.
Austin says, I often find my own experience in the ways in which you process your experiences with food, diet, and weight loss on this podcast. I have been overweight since I was young, and I am grateful to have found such a therapeutic resource through American Glutton.
Ah, that's so sweet. Thank you, Austin.
Nice, Austin.
And I'm glad. I think like that's the hope that people can relate.
He says, one question I do have is how you and your wife manage eating different things at the same meal. What does that look like on a practical level? Do you try to eat similar things during shared meals, or is it okay if you have rice, chicken, and broccoli and she has pasta? I am married, and this is something I would like to discuss with my wife as a part of my weight loss journey, and I would like to have an example of what it looks like in the context of a healthy relationship. Again, thank you so much for what you're doing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this is tricky. I think there have been different phases throughout our life because we've got a bunch of kids, and now we're kind of at that stage where our older kids actually live in another state, and our younger kids go to school in another state. Our younger kids are just about no longer our responsibility, which really that never is complete. But so I will say, like, back when we had four young kids and, you know, making dinner was making a meal for six people, it was kind of a pain in the ass. But I would typically not be eating what the kids were eating, you know. And I will say, like, my wife wasn't always eating what the kids were eating. There was kind of like, you know, an adult salad and maybe a protein for us. And then the kids would have, you know, quote unquote, healthy chicken nuggets and some kind of a starch. But I do often now, if we cut to today, honestly, my wife is eating what I'm eating. She's just eating it in a smaller portion, actually, than what I eat typically. And the only place where I'd say we differ is that when I make a salad or something like that, I will give her more dressing because she's not really on a diet. So with stuff like lean protein, she doesn't eat nearly as much lean protein as I do. And I watch my fat intake more than her and my carb intake more than her. So her plate might look like it's got a bit more rice than mine, a bit more salad with a bit more salad dressing and a much smaller serving of protein. And mine will look like a lot of protein and a little bit of salad and a little bit of rice. But we're not generally eating different foods like if we were at a restaurant and ordering different meals. That seems like a pain in the butt to me to be cooking two different meals at home. But I have certainly done that. I think that with a spouse, it's important to get some kind of an agreement. So like you said, you related to this podcast a lot. So I'm assuming that you have or are looking at massive weight loss, which takes a long time. And so, you know, within that are the foods that you're eating stuff that she's just repulsed by. Because I would try to get some agreement of like, you know, can we eat this way for the most part? And so therefore we don't have to make two meals where you're having pasta and I'm not. There have been many times, my wife's also not a sober person and I'm a sober person. So she might have a cocktail with dinner and I'm not having that. So I don't have any feeling about, you know, being triggered to want to eat her dinner or drink her beverage because it's something that I'm denying myself. I don't have that so much. And there's tons of food in my house that's really just shit that my kids buy or make us buy that is stuff that I won't eat that I kind of don't even really think about as food. Yeah, it's kind of complicated in that way. Was this helpful at all to Austin Page?
Well, I think in some way it probably was because you just brought up what always resonates with me when you talk about this topic is some form of agreement, right? So he, you know, you're basically saying talk to your wife and get some agreement of what you can have. Maybe they don't eat the exact same thing and maybe she prefers pasta to her rice, I'm making this up, but they agree on protein and vegetables. And so yeah, there's a small alteration or, you know.
For sure. The point I would make is for you, Austin, if you're having a lot of trouble right now and you've decided to give up pasta and pasta is not a part of your diet and your wife is eating pasta every day and that's a problem for you because it's very hard to abstain from pasta for you because it's in your face every day. I would have a conversation with her. You know, it's been decades now that I've been sober, but there certainly was a time period where I was not super comfortable around alcohol. And for that time period, my wife wasn't drinking and there was no alcohol in our house. And she was completely fine with that. And then after some time where it was fine. Like I didn't feel unsafe anymore, but this was, you know, I'm talking about years went by. Then we went wine tasting and I tasted olive oil at these vineyards and she tasted wine and that was okay. And I wasn't upsetting to me. It wasn't, didn't make me feel like I was going to break my sobriety. And then we had alcohol and we have a full bar in our house now and I'm never tempted to go behind the bar and mix myself a cocktail. I'm just not. But it that didn't happen overnight. And so with your wife, if she's ordering Domino's pizza every night and you're going like, I'm trying to stick on a diet, and it's really hard when Domino's pizza, like I had to have this conversation recently with my wife because I am dieting right now. And she was kind of regularly breaking out the Enlightened. And Enlightened's even diet ice cream. But if you're not accounting for it during the day, it's still 400 calories a pint. And that will kind of, you know, that's almost the entire deficit of a day's worth of food that I'm in. So it wipes out the day's work. And I finally said to her, like, look, for a few weeks, let me get a few weeks. I'm really having trouble because you're breaking out the Enlightened and then I'm eating the Enlightened and I don't want to be eating the Enlightened right now. And she was like, yeah, no problem. And so we stopped having Enlightened. So I do think it requires some kind of a communication and agreement from the other person to figure out some parameters to help you be successful.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I think that's a really good answer for Austin. He can let us know how it goes by writing exactly where you sent your question, Austin. Let us know how it's going. And if anyone else out there listening to this podcast has a question for Ethan, you can email it to us at AmericanGlutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee. You can follow us on Instagram at American Glutton Podcast. Sincerely.